I think the interesting thing too, I come from a, you know, faith-based religious community, and I didn't necessarily grow up listening to, you know, secular music. I listened to Jesus music and jazz. So on paper, I am probably the worst DJ, right? Because I didn't, that just wasn't stuff I listened to personally. But what I loved about that experience is that it made me really like more, I don't know if the word objective about music, you know, whether I liked it or not, does it work? You know, in trying to see it more as an experiment was really helpful. And also really relying on peers and just seeing people's reactions. And I think being a drummer helps too, thinking about, you know, sometimes it's the rhythm, it's the beat, you know, that people really like, and not necessarily the lyrics as much. I think one of the best things that I did, and anyone who wants to start off in this industry, if you're able to get something like this, I feel like it's kind of a unicorn though. I DJed for a college orientation, and the orientations had like 5 sessions. So within a 2-month span, I had basically the same demographic 5 times over. And the best part is, it was so neat to see, like, I played these similar songs, and one night it killed, one night it bombed. You know, it's just like, it's just so funny to see how fickle folks can be. But also you started to get into a rhythm and saying, I know if I do this song, which leads up to that song, which is going to help create some energy here, and how that's going to make things go really well. I think it was seeing that rhythm that started to really get me jazzed. And yeah, it was so rewarding, so much fun. So
welcome to Rochester Business Connections, powered by Bauberg Marketing, LLC, where I get the chance to chat with Rochester, New York's very best business owners, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders. I am your host, Ben Albert. Don't forget to subscribe. And remember, we don't do advertisements. My fee for this show is simple. If you gain value from the episode, personally share with a friend and explain your favorite part. Let's get started. Welcome, everyone, to Rochester Business Connections. I am here with Zach Sava. Zach, what's up, man? How are you today?
Hey, thanks so much for having me on. Really looking forward to this conversation today.
I'm excited. I took a note earlier where we kind of have a theme here, art of the side hustle, because you're full-time at Nazareth College, yep. But ultimately you're also owner and DJ at Suitable Sounds. If I'm remembering properly, you've been in a DJ for over 10 years, right? So you've been doing it for a long time.
Yeah, definitely. How about I just share my quick origin story from briefly how I ended up here, and then how music and how did this whole side hustle thing come about?
Please, yes.
Without getting into the gory details, I was totally a band geek in high school, Ghostbuntsport High School, woohoo. Drumline, percussion ensemble, jazz band. Music was just such a huge part of my life, and I loved it. And then I decided to go to SUNY Brockport for radio broadcasting, because I thought if I can't play music at that high level, if I can at least talk about it, that would be wonderful. And I remember a lonely night at the college radio station, and I did one of those mic breaks. It was something like, "Hi, this is Zach from 89.1 The Point. You're home for the best new music first." And, you know, and I'm asking people to give me a call for a song request. And, you know, Ben, it's 10 o'clock on a Friday night, and I did that. Do you think I got a lot of calls?
Probably not.
No, of course not. No, it's a, you know, and again,
not with college students, at least.
Yes, not from college students. And that is an award-winning college radio station. But for our local community, no. And that's where I woke up and I'm like, I don't know if I want to do this for the rest of my life. And then at the same time, I started to get involved in college stuff, and I was an orientation leader, and I decided to pursue a master's degree and then work in a college. And then right now I work at a career center. So I help students prepare for the real world and all of that great stuff. And as I was starting up my own DJ company, because I still loved music and I wanted that to be part of my life, I learned that wearing a suit and tie and having a portfolio and this whole concept of professionalism really helped me advanced in my side hustle. So it was kind of cool how my career kind of helped influence my side hustle, and how my side hustle of DJing and public speaking really helps me in my full-time job too. So it's really neat how they both kind of have a fusion together.
Yeah, they are. It's a great fusion. I mean, talking, mm-hmm. everyone's afraid of public speaking, and I'm wondering, in terms of side hustles, are a lot of the students these days looking for a side hustle? Is that more common than it used to be?
I think so. Yeah. You know, I think, you know, and again, you know, I'm a millennial, so I'm even thinking about more, you know, the next generation, Gen Z and stuff, and what they're looking for. You know, social impact is definitely something that's really important to them too. You know, and I think they're seeing, you know, YouTubers and TikTok, you know, I was going to say artists, and many of them are, but other TikTok professionals, right, making a living at this stuff. And I think they're a little bit more entrepreneurial than maybe some previous generations. And it's neat just to see the opportunities of, you know, the World Wide Web and what you can do and kind of, you know, make money at. So it's pretty neat for sure.
Yeah. And you've been doing it for over 10 years. So you are... You've got both ends of the coin, right? You help people with career advancement, but at the same time, you've got your own side gig. 10 years, man. So you started in college?
Yeah. So I started, it was my freshman year in college. You know, I went to a grad party in high school, and I saw this guy DJing. You know, he was, you know, probably more middle-aged, and I was, you know, just an 18-year-old punk kid, right? And I'm like, hey, that looks so cool. So I went up and was chatting with them, and then he took me under his wing, and I worked for him for about a year, and then decided that, you know what, I really want to try doing my own thing. And then that's when, you know, I was mentored by another great professional who actually is the station manager for Jazz 90.1, our local jazz station here in Rochester. And he mentored me and taught me how to open up the, you know, a DBA and how to get the tax documents that you need and all of that. And it's been great ever since. And even now doing it for, gosh, I think I'm getting close to 14 years or something like this, where I've been able to mentor other people. And for me, I really don't want to franchise or have other people work underneath me. So if I can help teach someone else to do what I do, and if I'm in a trouble and I need someone to help me out, I have friends in the business too that I can call on. I think, again, it's just a great way of giving back. So that's been pretty neat too, to see some folks that I've worked with kind of opening up their own shops too, and whether they work in the Rochester market or in Buffalo or elsewhere, it's been pretty cool.
So you start, you're like a freshman in college. Now you're helping mentor people. Let's get some tips for just about anybody, because one thing I've found is are those are drums, those are congas in the background for anyone watching the video here?
Yes, those are. Yep.
So you've got drums in your office at work. You obviously love music. You're passionate about music. And I believe it's good starting advice to tell someone to, you know, follow their passion. But I believe you have to do more than just follow your passion. There needs to be a market for it. You need to be tactical. You need to stand out. You're more than just someone up there pressing a button so Earth, Wind, and Fire comes on, right? Tell us a little bit about how you stand out. And, you know, everyone wants to be a DJ. They want to see people get married. They want to have drinks. Maybe they're romantic and they want to meet somebody as the DJ. They want to play music. There's all these fun, like, maybe perks, but I'm guessing it's not as exciting as I maybe even make it sound right now. You tell me, like, how do you stand out? What are some of the lies that I maybe just told? Lots of questions, but what, you know, overall experience.
Yeah, no, it's funny. And again, this is not a knock to anyone else who's in this profession, but sometimes I feel when I share that I'm a, you know, I'm a mobile disc jockey on the side. Sometimes folks, I don't know if it's like in the way they look at you or something like that, but it kind of has, and again, no disrespect for this business as well, but kind of like that grimy used car salesman trying to sell you something that you really don't need, or, you know, and yeah, I don't know how that kind of connotation came to the industry, but I think for me, what I try to bring to it, and what I know that a lot of guys that I work with who have their own shops do too, is that we're really in it for the people, you know, in this day and age, right? I sound so old this day and age, right? But like, I remember when I started, like, lugging around CDs, right? And then moving over to MP3s. And now, you know, I subscribe to music subscriptions and I don't physically necessarily own the tracks that I'm playing. You know, so it's just so interesting to see that industry change. And that technology has made it really easy for selecting music. But I think what the industry And what anyone looking to hire a DJ should think about, it's the person behind that. What kind of person do you want at your wedding, at your event, to try to help you with figuring out the other details that are going on? So I just really encourage people to hire a DJ that you feel comfortable with, someone that, you know, kind of gets you and gets the vibe for the event that you're trying to get through. And I think whether it's in DJing or in other businesses too, again, you want to try to work with people that you feel comfortable with. So, yeah.
Yeah. So don't just hire the first person I find online. Actually interview them, see if they're going to vibe with basically the kind of event I want to run. Another thing that's come to mind that I read was more than just a DJ, but an MC. Is DJ like a dirty word in the industry? Is it better to be an MC? What exactly does that mean?
Yeah. You know, when I tell people that I'm a DJ, and when it really comes down to it, I consider myself more of an MC than a DJ. Mm. I do mostly weddings, and I really enjoy kind of the event planning and assisting with that side. And then helping talk just minimally to say, here are the introductions, telling the audience this is what's going to happen next, and really being unobtrusive, but just try to help facilitate and just do those, you know, kind of key moments for talking things through. As far as DJing goes, I'm not really a true hardcore DJ in the sense of, you know, creating remixes and stuff like that.
That's scratching and all sorts of.
Yeah, because at my level, no one wants to hear my crappy remixes. They just want to hear their Shania Twain song or whatever, right? So why try to mess up something that's already perfect and that already has memories associated with it? So that's why I consider myself more of an MC. And then I guess the, you know, picking the music out, that's really where you're working with your clients to figure out what do you want to hear? What types of genres do you like? You know, I love the sociology of DJing to a degree, because it's reading a room, understanding what demographics you have there. You know, like if you're among our age, roughly, right? If you grew up in the 90s, you know, that's some of that music is really going to hit home with some, you know, childhood memories. So you might want to do that compared to someone who might be in their 40s or 50s. And maybe you want some 70s or even some 60s, you know, depending upon what music was popular when they were growing up and things like that. So I think it's all of that that people don't necessarily think about when it's just hiring a DJ. Yes, budget's important, but I think it's also comfort with the person that's going to be at your special event.
Yeah, comfort's huge. I don't want stress at an event like that. One thing I want to highlight is you mentioned, you know, sociology and paying attention to the memories associated with the song. Mm-hmm. And that kind of like light bulb in my head, because I was at a wedding and he was doing a lot of remixes and a lot of just kind of like whatever he felt. I thought he was on the mic a little more than he needed to be. He kind of wanted to be like the good time guy, like the club guy. I hadn't really thought about what about past memories and experiences where I love this song and suddenly you're mashing it with a song that I don't know, maybe there's trauma in my life, or maybe I don't like that song, or maybe I'm a purist. Do you have that conversation beforehand? Or like, is that part of the pre-conversation? Like no mashups or?
Yeah, no, that's incredibly insightful. Yeah. You hit on something that really, I kind of dig into deeper, and I know other DJs do too, when they're chatting with folks, but like, and especially when you're looking at marriages and their success rates and things like that, right? Sometimes if there's, you know, this is the second wedding for someone, you know, I like to know what were, if there's a song that you definitely don't want to hear, was that your previous first dance song? You know, there's been a situation where I need to be careful about certain artists because they were played heavily at another person's wedding and they have associations with those songs. Sure. So yeah, that's definitely something that I keep my eye on. It sounds silly too, but I think sometimes folks forget about, and again, where you're at, if you're at a wedding, and does that song have themes that are appropriate for a wedding?
Sure.
You know, and again, but it all comes back down to the couple. You know, I had a wedding where I had a group of individuals that were highly religiously affiliated, and there was a lot of, you know, traditions that were going on that related to religion. And my vibe was that they would not want the song requested and or played. And I had it requested a couple of times. So I went up and asked them, and then they were totally okay with it, you know, and they wanted to hear Baby Got Back, you know, and I'm just like, well,
okay,
you know, my assumptions. So sometimes it's great to check your own assumptions too. But like the other one was Lizzo, was it Truth Hurts? You know, kind of all about a breakup and stuff like that. And I'm like, do that song about breakup, celebrating love, like, you know, but that's just my opinion. So I like to check in with folks to say, like, where is your comfort level at with some of this stuff? And some of that, I make the decision. I'm like, you know what? I don't think that's appropriate. I don't want to bug the bride and groom. Other times, you know, if it's worth, you know, checking in with them. So it's just all about balance, I guess.
Yeah, balancing the comfort level. I love this because to me, this is any industry. You're being non-assumptive. You're reading the room and you're listening to your clients rather than being like, you know, I'm Zach. I've done this a million times. I know this track bumps. Everyone, grandma's going to start dancing to Baby Got Back. No, you need to listen to the room, listen to your client, let them decide. I'm wondering, you obviously had to gain some of these skills over time. Walk me through, and it doesn't have to be the very first time you DJed live, but it would be great if it was. When you were first getting your feet wet, like, who was Zach, you know, young, barely teenager, barely in his 20s kid, going up for the first time? Were you nervous? Were you a social butterfly and just comfortable? Tell me about those first experiences DJing.
Yeah, gosh, this is fun. I think the interesting thing too, I come from a, you know, faith-based religious community, and I didn't necessarily grow up listening to, you know, secular music. I listened to Jesus music and jazz. So on paper, I am probably the worst DJ, right? Because that just wasn't stuff I listened to personally. But what I loved about that experience is that it made me really like more, I don't know if the word objective about music, you know, whether I liked it or not, does it work? You know, and trying to see it more as an experiment was really helpful. And also really relying on peers and just seeing people's reactions. And I think being a drummer helps too, thinking about, you know, sometimes it's the rhythm, it's the beat, you know, that people really like, and not necessarily the lyrics as much. I think one of the best things that I did, and anyone who wants to start off in this industry, if you're able to get something like this, I feel like it's kind of a unicorn now. I DJed for a college orientation, and the orientations had like 5 sessions. So within a 2-month span, I had basically the same demographic 5 times over. And the best part is it was so neat to see, like, I played these similar songs and one night it killed, one night it bombed, you know, it's just wow. So funny to see how fickle folks can be. But also you started to get into a rhythm and saying, I know if I do this song, which leads up to that song, which is going to help create some energy here, and how that's going to make things go really well. And I think it was seeing that rhythm that started to really get me jazzed. And yeah, it was so rewarding, so much fun. So if you're new in DJing, trying to get more events underneath your belt, more opportunities to experiment and to see, and just to be humble, you know, and if there's a song that you're not sure if it's going to go well or not, depends if it's a safe opportunity to experiment with that song. And if it is, try it. And then if everyone leaves the dance floor, you don't have to play the rest of the song, cut it out, fade it out, and bring something else in. So I guess that opportunity, like, when is it safe to take a risk? You know, I think that's something that kind of translates to other businesses too.
It does. I mean, so you're taking a risk, but you're also putting in practice and repetition, and you're also getting some original research in. Like, this does work, but that doesn't mean it's going to work for every client in every scenario. But you start to see the trends, you start to listen, you start to be more insightful. Nowadays, it's been over 10 years, you've done countless events and weddings. Are you burnt out? Are you sick of watching people get married? Well, what's the change, the evolution looked like?
Oh, man. Geez, I feel like you are a fly on the wall of my wife's and mine house, because like these are conversations we're having, right?
Yeah.
I think I'm getting to the point where having a family is something that's coming up between my wife and I. And do I want to be out late night on weekends? You know, so that's definitely something that I've toyed with and trying to figure out, is it time to retire? Because I still want to make sure that if I'm committing to a wedding, I want to make sure my heart's fully into it, you know? And for right now in this season of life, I still really enjoy it, you know, because I have a full-time job, the money that I make DJing, there isn't like strings attached to it. So it's just for fun. And we use some of that funds for vacations or whatever. So it's not like I have to make this money, which is really helpful for the side hustle. Right. But I really do hope to continue to continue this, and maybe if anything, do it in smaller numbers, you know, but I am such a romantic at heart too, in the symbolism of weddings. And it's so neat to see every wedding be so unique per couple, you know, and it's just so neat to be part of people's big day like that.
I'm a romantic at heart as well. A lot of the listeners are too, and they're just being the fly on the wall or being the person administrative and learning and just being perceptive at all these weddings is probably an emotional experience. I'm wondering, this is a tough question. I don't know if anyone's ever asked you that, but is there certain commonalities you find in couples? Is there certain things that being a fly on the wall for so many of these, you start to see like beautiful things or maybe red flags? You tell me, is there any certain commonalities you've seen?
Yeah, I can put it as concisely as this. When I meet couples that are in it for the marriage and not the wedding, that's the couple I want. Mm. So, and I get to stuff like that when I ask them, tell me about your story. You know, one of the first questions I ask as we start to get to know each other is, how did you meet? You know, what did that look like? What was the first date like? How did you propose? You know, what was that magical moment like? And then another question is, what, you know, and it's more hard to respond, but like, what's the vibe, the atmosphere that you would hope that people walking away from your wedding would have? And from those kind of abstract questions, I can kind of get a feel to say, yeah, I think these are the kind of people that I really want to work with compared to, and again, I've worked with very detail-oriented people, and then I've worked with very go with the flow. And I don't think one is harder than the other, but like, if I feel like all of the focus is on getting this one day 100% right down to the, you know, second, that's just tough. And then I see them struggle, you know. Well, I can't say luckily I've only seen a few of the weddings that I've DJed end up with marriage not lasting. But from the most of the couples that I've seen go the distance are those that are really saying, I want to commit to you, and I just want this day to be a celebration of us and our loved ones. And that's just so cool.
It sounds like you, I mean, there's value in the fact you have a full-time job and you don't need this money to pay for your vacation that you can't afford. You have the full-time job. This is on the side. You get to choose your clients, right? I can't just call you with my checkbook and expect you to work with me. You actually say no to clients, I imagine, right?
I have a website, I have some social media stuff, and for the most part, I really rely on word of mouth. Mm. And, you know, I usually have about 10 weddings or so a year. Mm. And honestly, there's probably only one or two weddings that I've said yes to that I probably should have said no. but for the most part, you know, I've worked with almost everyone that's come across my path. And I think part of that is the first couple that I said yes to that were fantastic. And then it was one of their friends who was also fantastic, who, you know, it's kind of like you start to get in this great network of people, you know? So I've been really blessed in that regard to not having to say no to people, you know? But for me, it's also something that I'm always growing in, is being able to have those difficult conversations to say, you know what, I don't think this is going to be the best fit, you know? And the one wedding that I probably should have said no to was a wedding where they were really, really invested in having a lot of alcohol there, and things just got real sloppy. And people were just being rude and disrespectful. It's like, I'm doing this because I enjoy being here, but I don't enjoy getting yelled at because I didn't play your really, really, really bad song. You know what I mean? So it's interesting.
It is interesting. And you made a couple good points there. Where I was first going with it is that there is something empowering about having a side hustle and not needing the cashola, where You don't need to be bullied into projects that aren't a good fit. But you added something that was so much more powerful. It's when you find a good client and you nurture that relationship and you provide an incredible service and they love it, and it was their wedding, so it's an emotional day, and you were there for them. The word of mouth referrals and the recommendations you'll get, when a great person recommends someone, I usually go in with the assumption that it's another great person. Now, there are bad apples out there, but good people know better good people. So if you're bullying people to do business with you, anyone, if you're bullying people to do business, or you're just focused on cash, you might miss that great person that's actually a more important relationship to nurture. So you basically built this on mostly word of mouth, you said?
Yeah. You know, kind of what we're talking about reminds me of Simon Sinek, if you're familiar with him. His book, I don't know how old it is at this point, Start With Why, was just so cool. And the idea that people don't buy what you do, they buy why you do it. Mm-hmm. And that this isn't just psychology. It's like biological. And the part of the brain that controls decision-making doesn't control language. So it's like, when I meet someone that's cool, it's like, I can't describe like how cool you are, Ben, but I feel like we're kindred spirits of sorts without getting weird, right? You know what I mean? There's just like a gut feeling. I'm like, oh, they're just a neat person.
It's the music thing, man. It's the music thing, Zach, because I'm a music child too, but go on.
Yeah, no, totally. You know, whether we're talking about that for couples and DJing, or, you know, I use that concept all the time when I'm helping students with job searching. You know, you're just trying to find your tribe, trying to find people who are passionate and you're, you know, really excited about the same things. And just you being authentically you will help find people who are similar within values and interests and such. So I just can't stress that enough, you know. And I think for me, that belief and practice has really helped kind of grow my business with, you know, working with just good people all around.
Mm. I love it, Zach. We're kindred spirits. And oh, I have all these far stretching questions, but they're coming to mind, man. And I'm thinking, because you work with, you know, students looking for career advancement, they are going to need to interview for jobs. It is a situation in this day and age where you don't have to go for the first job offer you get. You can kind of interview your employer. And a lot of the business owners and business people that listen, they maybe should be interviewing their clients. And in your scenario, it's no-brainer. Interview your DJ, because they're the one controlling the music and the microphone. They have closer access to the mic than you do. So I want to bring in the right guy. Is there any of these scenarios? That's why I know it's far stretching. Are there red flags, whether it's an employer or a client or even just a DJ? Is there common red flags that maybe I shouldn't work for this person, maybe I shouldn't work with this person? Have you ran into any of those?
Yeah. You know, and again, I think for me, this is just my own personal red flag. And it's so tough, but like when I get a sense of arrogance, that's when I'm like, ooh, major red flag. Whether it's someone that I'm interviewing to work with us, or whether it's me talking to a client and then they're just feeling very confident, or, and again, confidence and arrogance, oh, such a fine line, right?
Yes.
But like when
I feel like it's a fine line, but it's a thick one. If someone's tremendously arrogant, they can be confident as well, but there's a big difference in the temperament.
Good. I love that differentiator. I think you're right. Temperament is huge there. You know, being confidently humble is, I think, the sweet sauce there, you know, and just willing to have a conversation. But when I start to see arrogance and just the sense that they're not willing to listen and they just want to tell you what they think, though I am in the service industry, you know, I'm still a person here too, you know. Right. So, you know, I think sometimes the service providers, whether it's the caterer or the photographer, you know, I think all of us are still in that service. We want to help, but, you know, we also have power to say, I don't think this is the best fit for us. I don't, you know, and so, yeah, I'm kind of rambling here, but yeah, I think for me, those are the biggest red flags, is kind of that arrogance, not willing to listen.
It's tough because not all of us, but many of us have worked for an arrogant boss. And there is something empowering, you said there, that as a side hustle, you don't have to work with that arrogant person. You get to choose. Any just general, because we're talking about side hustles so much, any general thoughts on if, when, why, what someone should start a side hustle? Can anyone do it? What's your opinion on side hustles as a whole?
Yeah, no, I really encourage folks to start small, you know, and it just depends at, you know, at what level you want to get in. So when I started DJing, you know, I bought a rig, you know, speakers and such. And then after 2 years, I sold that stuff to a guy I was mentoring and then bought another rig. And that was a little bit more expensive. But like, there are those like kind of on and off ramps where you're able to kind of figure out, is this what I want to do? And if so, at what levels to invest? I think sometimes that's tough when you're trying to figure out your side hustle. You know, for example, my wife is a sign language interpreter at RIT, but she's a beautiful artist. Well, she's beautiful, yes. And she also creates beautiful art. Yeah. A picture is there on my back wall that you can't really see. But for her, like the investment isn't all that much. And right now she's starting to, you know, do these beautiful custom orders. But then also she's starting to think about, well, maybe I should start doing prints and selling prints because there's less time and I might be able to make for some more money at that. Mm-hmm. So again, trying to figure out where do you want to start? Maybe just starting small, putting out some content on social media, or even just with your family, friends, just trying to get people invested and seeing if they take to it. And if they do, then you maybe start to take it up to the social media level, excuse me, and start to reach bigger audiences. But I think just starting small, sharing it with people you care about and seeing their reaction and kind of going from there.
Yes, start small and see their reaction. You seem to have a skill for, again, actually taking a data set of the sociology of like the emotional intelligence involved. Are people loving this? I'll be the first to admit, Zach, I've started a lot of things and I always do a bad job at the front end of things. I can't think of a single thing personally. I know some people are just rock stars, but I can't think of a single thing I've done that I was incredible right from the start. And I can't think of a single investment I made that was the right investment from the start. Mm-hmm. I get bad equipment. I'll host maybe my podcast on the wrong provider. My questioning's not very good. There's all these little things that you look back and you're like, oh my God, you were terrible. But those little baby steps in making an investment in a $40 microphone, which isn't as nice as this $150 microphone I'm using now, still wasn't a waste of my money because it was that stepping stone for me to start getting my feet wet, falling forward a little bit, and then eventually get results. Not saying people can't just come out of the gate and get results. I've watched them do it. They're way cooler and way more impressive than I am. But for me personally, and it sounds like for a lot of people, just get started, right? Just make one forward step and you'll get momentum over time.
Yeah. You know, if I had to give one like lasting piece of advice to anyone, whether it's side hustle or just career in general, like I can't stress this enough or underestimate. That's what I'm looking for. Yes. Can't underestimate the importance of just talking with people and relationship building. Mm-hmm. That is just so huge for me with DJing. You know, a person that I shadowed just to think, I think I want to be a radio DJ. So I shadowed this guy. He ended up becoming a lifelong mentor and DJed my own wedding. Like, wow. I never would have guessed that relationship from, you know, when I was a sophomore in high school would have produced fruit, you know, all of these years later. And again, it wasn't that I was trying to get something out of him. I just really liked him and we clicked and, you know, stayed connected. So I think if you're trying to figure out if this is a side hustle, talk to people who are doing it. I think most people want to help others who are passionate about the same things they are, you know, and you just don't know where it's going to go from there. But at the same time, you know, if you're connecting with someone and there isn't a chemistry, that's okay too. Don't mm-hmm. force it. Sometimes trying to force a relationship that isn't working isn't really worth it either. Try to find somebody else. you know, there's tons of ways to connect with different people, whether it's online or in person. So just continue to develop relationships with folks.
I couldn't agree more. There's nothing better than obviously a one-on-one in-person mentor that ends up DJing at your wedding. That being said, we have an entire world of opportunity with this Zoom thing and with this internet thing that even if your tribe isn't right around the street, we can find them online. And like you said, people are happy to help others that are passionate about what they're doing.
Yeah, no, couldn't agree more.
Let's put an exclamation point there. We're going to go into the rapid fire round. These are short, sweet, you know, either or fill in the blank questions. Just to get to know Zach on a personal level a little bit more.
Sure. We'll get sounds
started.
Great.
Coffee or tea?
Coffee.
Cats or dogs?
Cats.
Are you a morning person or a night owl?
Neither.
You have to be a night owl sometimes, though.
9 to 5. That's my prime hours, if possible.
Love it. Do you have a favorite season?
Oh, I love fall. Ran cross country in fall, and I love it.
I'm going to ask a couple of music questions because I know you're a drummer, you're a music guy. Is there an instrument that you have no clue how to play that you just love to be able to learn overnight?
Oh my gosh. I think piano. It's so versatile. I just love listening to instrumental piano play. It's just beautiful.
And what's at the top of your playlist right now? It can be 1, 2, 3 bands, but what's at the top of the playlist right now?
Oh gosh, Ben, I'd love to pick your brain about this another time, but it's terrible. I love Spotify, and because of it, I listen to Spotify playlists, and I just don't always know the names of the artists. But it's I could tell you, it's like right now I'm really big into lo-fi. Absolutely love lo-fi, kind of chill instrumental music with a strong backbeat, which is just great. I can listen to it while I'm doing work or getting ready to go to work or go to bed. It's just kind of that perfect mood for me. So big lo-fi fan right now.
Oh, and no shame in that. I mean, there's, for example, Spotify, there's a channel NU. They spell NU, new, new. It's New Funk Radio, and it's just like radio and R&B. And I've listened through the playlist a few times, but I don't know the artists. But I know the words to the songs, but not the artists, because you know I'm driving and I'm not checking my phone every couple minutes. So, no shame in not knowing everyone by name. What else? Let's do one more because we forgot. This is not even a rapid fire. I just wanted to bring it up because we had talked about it. We joked about it beforehand, and I didn't squeeze it in. Pronouncing names. And I was joking about how I was in a sales role and I had to do a lot of cold calling in a previous career and I couldn't pronounce anyone's name. As the wedding DJ, as the MC, you really can't get the wife's name incorrect. You definitely don't want to get the wife's father's name incorrect. Have you had any issues?
Oh man. Yeah. So I can't believe I'll share the story. It's good. It's all good. But so lately, what I've been doing within the last couple of years, it's been super helpful. I'll meet with a client in person, whatever. And then I pop up in my phone and do a voice memo. So I'll have, you know, I was actually going through and I was reading the names, pronouncing it. And if I got it wrong, they would read it correctly. But lately, I've just been having them read it. It's been really interesting to see how many people don't know how to pronounce their own bridal party's names and last names. It's just so funny to see sometimes.
Interesting.
But that's helpful just for me to hear it in their own words. But gosh, I am so ashamed to share the story. And even right now, Ashley, I am so sorry. She's a professional event planner too. I DJed this wedding. And when I went to pronounce last name, I pronounced the wrong last name. I pronounced the officiant's last name. And this was a military wedding. And to say that I got busted on for that, I was teased relentlessly. They were okay with it. You said the last name wrong. You know, a split second later, you say it correctly because you know what you did. But it's just like, oh my gosh, how could I do that? And then looking back, I know why I did it. I spent probably an hour and a half before doing that helping set up a projector for a slideshow that was supposed to be going on. So it's like, that wasn't part of my job, but it's something that needed to be done. So I was in that headspace, and then I had to throw, get ready to do this. And I was just flustered, you know? So I have learned to take a moment, take a breath, and use some of those other skills. But man, the one thing that a DJ can't do is exactly what I did. So shout out to you, Ashley. Once again, I am so sorry. I know you won't let me live it down. But I've worked with her since in other capacities. So it's so nice to know that that relationship wasn't ruined by that one mistake.
Oh man, Zach, you know, the number one fear in America is public speaking. This isn't making it any easier. This, what can you do though? I mean, you're only human.
Yeah. It's just having grace with yourself too, you know? And then I went up and apologized, and even just owning your own crap, you know, I can't emphasize that enough too. You know, I think that's just so important, and just being self-aware. You know, I think for me, it goes back down to that arrogance that just drives me nuts. It's just like, we're not all Hercules, okay? You know, so just own what you're good at and what you're not. And if you make a mistake, you own it, and then you move on.
I love this. We're not all Hercules. Own your own crap. Show yourself some grace. Lots of just nuggets of wisdom, lots of beauty in this conversation, more than just the beauty of marriage, but the beauty in the tips that we all can basically compound and bring into our business and into our life. Well, Zach, I think I have no more questions for you. I think you answered it all. I just appreciate you taking the time with me. And hopefully we do it again sometime soon. Kindred spirits, I guess, right?
Yeah, man. No, thanks so much. It's been great. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to Rochester Business Connections. Don't forget to share this, rate, and comment on your favorite platform. You can also email me, ben@valbertmarketing.com. Let's connect soon. Until then, keep thriving, everyone.